All right, get ready for this one because we're going deep into a case that's got it all: betrayal, big money, and a legal battle over non-competes. You could think of it as like Succession meets Law and Order, but with movie theater popcorn.
Yeah, what's fascinating about this case is that it gets right to the heart of something we see a lot these days. How do you balance the employer's right to protect their business and the employee's right to just, you know, work?
Exactly. And in this case, we're in the world of cleaning movie theaters with a company called Syncon Industries going up against two former execs, Wood and Hogan.
And these aren't just any employees. We're talking a vice president of sales and a regional manager, both of whom had signed those standard contracts, you know, the ones with the non-compete and non-solicitation clauses.
Okay, so for our listeners who don't see these every day, can you break that down? What do those clauses say?
Yeah, so those clauses basically said, if you leave Syncom, you can't compete with us or try to steal our clients for 3 years.
Sounds pretty straightforward, right?
In theory, yeah. But as we know, the legal devil is often in the details.
And boy, did those details get messy. Wood and Hogan leave Syncom, and you guessed it, launched their own rival company. They called it Big E Theater Cleaning.
And it didn't take long for them to start picking up contracts from, shall we say, familiar faces, former Syncom clients.
So naturally, Syncom cried foul and took them to court for breach of contract.
And they actually won initially. The trial court really hit them hard with over $1.1 million in damages, plus those injunctions that barred Wood and Hogan from even working with Syncom's client list.
Sounds like game over.
Well, not so fast.
This is where the plot has a twist that belongs on Law and Order. The New Hampshire Supreme Court steps in and decides to look a little closer.
And they drop a bombshell. The Supreme Court finds that those non-competes and non-solicitations in the contracts were so broad that they were basically unenforceable.
Wait, so you're saying a company can't just stop their former employees from working in a whole industry?
Exactly. And that's where those three prongs, the test New Hampshire uses to determine if these things are enforceable, come into play. First, does the employer have a legitimate business interest to protect, like trade secrets? Second, would enforcing the restriction cause undue hardship to the employee? And lastly, is there potential harm to the public? In this case, the Supreme Court said Syncom's restrictions failed on that second prong, undue hardship.
So do you give an example of this?
Imagine working for a software company and then leaving. Suddenly, your former employer says you can't work for any software company, even companies you've never heard of before. That's basically what was happening to Wood and Hogan.
And the court said that wasn't okay.
Right. They said, nope, not cool. They said that Syncom's non-compete stopped Wood and Hogan from working with all of Syncom's clients, even the ones they hadn't personally worked with before. It was like using a sledgehammer to crack a nut.
Okay, so this sounds like a big win for employees. The court throws out the non-compete, and it sounds like Wood and Hogan are in the clear. But here's where it gets even more interesting. The court still says they breached their fiduciary duty.
Yeah, that's right. Because even though the non-compete was too broad, the court basically said, hold on, these guys were actively planning their own business while they were still working for Syncom.
So even if a non-compete isn't perfect, you can't just start working against your employer.
Exactly. And the court made it very clear that this breach of fiduciary duty, this loyalty issue, was different from the non-compete problem.
So what happened to that $1.1 million that Syncom won?
Well, the Supreme Court said to wait a second, they vacated the award. Because the original damages were based on the non-compete that was too broad, they basically told the lower court to recalculate it based on this breach of fiduciary duty.
So the damages could be lower now, or even higher.
That's right. And the Supreme Court did the same thing with the attorney fees, putting them on hold until the trial court looked at it again.
What a ride. So what's the main thing our listeners should take away from this?
I think it's a reminder that even if a non-compete isn't ironclad, that doesn't mean you can start undermining your employer. There's still this very important duty of loyalty that the courts take very seriously.
So we've got damages that need to be recalculated, a non-compete that might be revised, and this whole question of fiduciary duty. It sounds like this case could really impact both employers and employees.
You said it, and we're just getting started. Stick with us as we dig deeper into what happened next and what lessons we can learn from this legal battle. Welcome back to our deep dive into Syncom Industries versus Wood and Hogan. This case is a great example of how tricky non-compete agreements can be. It's not always a clear win for one side or the other.
Yeah, you're right. It's a real legal minefield, especially for employers who are just trying to protect their businesses. One thing I found really interesting was this whole idea of a meeting of the minds that the court talked about. What exactly does that mean?
Oh yeah, that's where things get a bit tricky. It's not enough for an employer to just shove a non-compete in front of someone and say, sign this or you're fired. The court wants to see that both sides really understood what they were agreeing to and that there wasn't any coercion.
So it's like a fairness check, making sure everyone was on the same page.
Exactly. Imagine you're a new grad right out of school and you're desperate to get your dream job. Then you get this huge legal document full of jargon. Are you really in a position to argue or negotiate?
I see your point. It would be easy to feel pressured to sign something you don't really understand, especially when your job is on the line.
And the courts get that. They want to see that the employee had the chance to ask questions, maybe even talk to a lawyer. It's about making sure everyone's informed and has a fair chance.
This case also makes you think about how specific these non-competes need to be. The court really came down hard on Syncom for their restrictions.
Yeah, and for good reason. The Supreme Court was basically saying that you can't use a non-compete to stop all competition. Think about it. If every company could stop their former employees from working in the same industry, innovation would just stop.
So for our listeners, if they're thinking about using non-competes, what are some things they should keep in mind? How do they protect their business without being too restrictive?
The key is to be specific. The agreement needs to clearly state the geographical scope, like no working within 50 miles, and it should list the specific clients or types of work that are off limits. No more blanket bans.
So instead of saying you can't work in software development, it would be more like you can't work on projects similar to Project X for 2 years.
Exactly. It's about protecting real business interests like trade secrets or client information. Not punishing someone for leaving.
Okay, and what about how long these restrictions last? 3 years, like in Syncom's case, seems like a long time.
Well, the Syncom case suggests that things are changing. Courts are moving towards shorter, more focused restrictions. What was reasonable a few years ago might not be okay today.
So employers need to stay up to date. Now, the court also talked about this thing called reformation. What does that even mean?
Oh, it's actually a pretty neat legal tool. Reformation basically lets the court change a contract a little to make it enforceable, but only in certain situations.
So they don't just throw the whole thing out.
Right. They're basically saying, this needs some work, but we can fix it. In this case, they sent the non-compete back to the trial court and said, hey, this is way too broad right now. See if you can narrow it down and make it more reasonable.
That's really interesting. It shows that courts aren't always black and white. They want to find solutions that work for everyone.
Exactly. And that's where good faith comes in. If the employer can show they were trying to be reasonable, not just trying to control their employees, the courts are more likely to use reformation.
So even if you mess up and write a non-compete that's too broad, showing good faith can help you. Now, I want to talk about the other big issue in this case, fiduciary duty. This seems like something that's easy to overlook, but it can be just as important as a non-compete.
Absolutely. This is where it gets kind of Shakespearean, all about loyalty and betrayal.
Because even though the court agreed with Wood and Hogan on the non-compete, they still held them responsible for breaching their fiduciary duty. That's a big difference, right?
Huge. The court was saying just because the non-compete wasn't perfect doesn't mean you can act like a double agent. You still owe your employer loyalty.
So what exactly did Wood and Hogan do that was wrong? What does it mean to breach your fiduciary duty?
In this case, the court found that they were busy planning their competing business while they were still getting paid by Syncom. They were going to industry events, meeting with potential clients, even trying to poach some. It's like they were already gone, but still taking Syncom's money.
So even if you're unhappy and want to leave your job, you can't start working against your current employer. That's important for everyone to remember.
It is. And this applies even if you don't have a non-compete. Fiduciary duty is a separate legal thing that governs how employees and employers should act. It's about trust and acting in the best interests of the company.
So it's not just about following the law, it's about ethics.
Right, and that's why the court was so concerned about what Wood and Hogan did. They were hurting Syncom while still working there.
This case shows that even if you win on a technicality, your actions still matter. You can't just ignore ethics.
And the consequences can be serious. Remember, we still don't know what the final damages will be. The trial court could still decide to punish Wood and Hogan for breaching their fiduciary duty.
This case really shows how complicated employment law is. It's not just about contracts. It's about the whole relationship between employers and employees.
And that relationship is built on trust, respect, and understanding each other's rights.
Okay, we've covered a lot, from non-compete agreements to fiduciary duty. But this case isn't over yet. We still need to see what happens with the damages and if those restrictions get changed.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about what this case means for non-compete agreements in New Hampshire and other states.
All right, well, we need a minute to process all this. But when we come back, we'll dive into the final part of Syncom Industries versus Wood and Hogan. We'll talk about what happened when the case went back to the trial court and what we can all learn from this legal saga.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to our deep dive. You know, we've covered the twists and turns, and now we're at the final act of Syncom Industries versus Wood and Hogan. It's time to see how it all ends and what we can learn from it.
Yeah, you know, this case really captures that whole debate around non-competes. On the one hand, you have employers trying to protect their business. And on the other, you have employees who want to be free to use their skills and build their careers.
It's a tough balance to find. And it seems like the courts are still trying to figure out where the line is, you know, what's fair to everyone.
Right. And that's why this case is so important. Even though it's just in New Hampshire, it has implications that go way beyond that. Other states, even the federal government, are looking at these issues and trying to come up with laws that find that balance.
Okay, so let's get back to Syncom and Wood and Hogan. What happened after the Supreme Court sent the case back to the trial court? Did they rewrite the non-compete? And what about the damages?
So the trial court did exactly what the Supreme Court told them to do. They took another look at those restrictions. And remember, the Supreme Court said the original restrictions were way too broad.
Right. They said Wood and Hogan couldn't work with any of Syncom's clients, even the ones they'd never worked with before.
Exactly. So the trial court went in and really narrowed those restrictions down. They focused on specific clients that Wood and Hogan actually had contact with, and they limited the non-compete to a smaller area.
So they basically tried to make it more reasonable.
Yes, exactly. They tried to tailor it to Syncom's actual business interests. And because of those changes, because they showed they were trying to be fair, the new non-compete was considered enforceable.
Wow. So even though the Supreme Court first struck down the non-compete, a version of it still survived.
It did. And that's a big lesson for everyone involved. It's not always all or nothing. Sometimes there's room for compromise, for finding solutions that work for both sides.
So the non-compete is back in play. But what about the damages? Did Wood and Hogan end up having to pay that $1.1 million?
Well, remember, the Supreme Court said to forget about the original damages because they were based on the old non-compete. They told the trial court to recalculate the damages based on the breach of fiduciary duty, that loyalty issue.
Right, because even though the non-compete was fixed up, the court still wasn't happy with how Wood and Hogan acted while they were still at Syncom.
That's right, and this is where things get interesting. The trial court considered the fact that Wood and Hogan had been planning their own business, talking to Syncom's clients, and basically working against their employer. But they also recognized that the new non-compete might have helped reduce Syncom's losses.
So they had to balance those things, the harm from the breach of fiduciary duty and the impact of the new restrictions.
Exactly. And finally, they came up with a new amount of damages. It was a lot less than the original $1.1 million, but still a lot of money. They also gave Syncom some attorney's fees, but again, less than the original amount.
So even though Wood and Hogan get the non-compete changed, they still had to pay for what they did?
That's right. And I think that's a very important takeaway for anyone listening. Even if you think you found a loophole or a technicality, your actions still matter. The courts will look at the whole situation, and if you haven't acted in good faith, you'll face consequences.
It shows that employment law is about more than just rules. It's about relationships, expectations, and being fair.
Exactly. And this case shows how important it is to get legal advice early on. Whether you're an employer writing a non-compete or an employee thinking about signing one, having an expert on your side can make a huge difference.
Because even simple agreements can be complicated and small details can have big consequences.
You know, as we wrap up this deep dive, it occurs to me that this isn't just a legal battle. It's a story about ambition, loyalty, competition, and the relationship between employers and employees.
And like any good story, it leaves us with some questions. How will this case affect non-compete laws in New Hampshire and other places? Will we see more challenges to these agreements? And will the courts keep pushing for fairness?
Those are questions for another time, another deep dive. But for now, I think we've explored the ups and downs of Syncom Industries versus Wood and Hogan.
We've talked about the legal details, the ethical questions, and what this all means in practice. We hope you found it informative and maybe even a little bit entertaining.
And who knows, maybe it's given you some new ideas about how to navigate the world of employment law.
Thanks for joining us. Until next time, stay curious and stay informed.